Welcome into the Sports Hub Patriots podcast. It is time to recap day five of Patriots training camp, or if you ask some people, including Bill Belichick, really day one of Patriots training camp, because camp truly begins when the pads come on. That's what happened today. I'm Alex Barth from 98.5 thesportshub.com. I'm joined by Andrew Callahan. He covers the Patriots for the Boston Herald. Andrew, you buying into today really being the first day of camp? Did the last 4 days just not mean anything?
Yeah, it's funny. I asked him about that last week on Tuesday. He called it the continuation of minicamp, right? Because they canceled that last day. It's a lot of installation. There are no pads. I don't totally buy it. Like, there's a ramp up here, and I think that's smart. But if any guys are loafing in the first 4 days, like, you're in trouble. This is training camp. Things count. You're being evaluated. They're just not weighing it as heavily in the evaluation part.
And that is the key, kind of, you know, the past week for, on this podcast, I'm sure you've done where you've talked everybody covering the team. There's this kind of just overhanging caveat of, well, they're not in pads. Well, they're not in pads. So the caveat of it's just one day is there. But for the most part, we get to throw that off. We'll get into some individual players in a little bit. But just overall, you've now seen this team play what more so resembles football as opposed to what they were doing the last 4 days. What jumped out to you today?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the biggest theme was the new zone running game was terrible. Like, this is to be expected, some growing pains with the new offense, and it's not particularly complicated. But when you see kind of backup defensive linemen easily knifing through the offensive line, your starting group of offensive linemen, that's problematic, because then they're going to be building a lot of their play action game, it seems, off of this outside stretch kind of zone with a complement of some inside zone. I'm sure they'll mix in some duo and man stuff. But if this is the switch they're making, you know, today was a rough start. So I think that's big picture. You know, Mac bounces back a little bit, but everything else is really secondary to that whole offensive line and operation and team periods, because now we can evaluate the offensive line. Because like you mentioned, the pads are.
Well, then let me ask you this. If we're going to, you know, talk about kind of the offensive system, we heard from Matt Patricia today before training camp, all the offensive or all the assistant coaches, both sides of the ball spoke, but Matt Patricia really went, I think, for about 10 or 12 minutes, about as long as all the other coaches went. You know, they had two sessions. Patricia went on his own. What did you make of what he had to say about it being a collaborative process for the offense? They still haven't named a play caller. What'd you make of what he had to say today?
Yeah, I think he really just echoed a lot of what we already heard, right, from Bill and from Mac. And Mac's talking about, you know, it's an open conversation, which I think is good, you know, particularly for coaches who, like Joe Judge and Matt Patricia, have gone elsewhere, kind of ruled with an iron or, you know, one step down from that fist, and it didn't go so well. So to have this dynamic where Mac, you know, it was an attractive prospect in the first place because of how smart he is, how intelligent, you know, on the field. He processes quickly with the plays. He can digest large volumes of information in the classroom. Like, you want to collaborate with a guy like that, particularly given he's going to be implementing whatever system you want to build around him. So the Patriots have always had that back and forth. But I think especially for new coaches like Joe Judge, Matt Patricia, switching to offense, you know, Judge is coaching for the second year, but it's really a fresh start. Like, that's big. So otherwise, you know, the play caller thing, he's not going to cough that up. He's going to defer to Belichick, right, like all the players do when it comes to that. But I think, you know, the collaborative part is better, because the more minds they have into this, it's not on Patricia or just Joe Judge or Belichick to write the system. You have as many ideas on the table, and then they just have to sift through and figure out which ones are best for them.
When it comes to Mac, you mentioned he bounced back. He ended practice on Saturday with the ball that probably would have been a pick six in a game to Kyle Duggar. Comes out today, his first pass is picked off, but after that, he goes 10-14. Again, that bounce back. We saw this at times last year with him in camp, where he'd go through these, you know, stretches. Is this, the bounce back in itself, a sign of some growth maybe for Mac Jones, in addition to what he did schematically when he bounced back?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you're always going to have the ebb and flows of camp, right? You know, and I couldn't tell you when we use the word ebb, except for to say ebb and flows, but we all get the idea, right? You're going to have up days, you're going to have down days.
Right.
And in the down days, when you looked at the numbers from Saturday, you know, most of his problems were downfield or in that last red zone period where they, you know, it's the four straight day of red zone offense. The area is restricted. So he goes 2 of 6 in that last period. And then downfield, I think it was something like 4 of 10. And you had two drops in there. You had a couple pass breakups. So, like, he was throwing a catchable ball. Just one of those days, it didn't really work out. As far as this interception goes, he just didn't see Terrence Mitchell. I mean, this is a big over route, which you're going to see pair a lot with, I think, this outside zone stretch game, pull the play action, because that over route, you know, 10 to 12 to 15 yards down the field is behind the linebackers, you know, conceivably getting sucked up in the play action. So I think he was himself, you know, he had 9 of 10 per the numbers I had down, you know, was 9 of 10 within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. and 1-4, 1-5 beyond that. So that's kind of what we've seen from Mac, but you have to counter and factor in they're in the red zone a lot. So he's just not going to have that many downfield opportunities.
All right, let's get into some of the guys now that we really got to see truly for the first time today with the pads on, got to do the most of what they do. I actually want to start with the running backs because this is a position that I think people are catching on to how big of a question this could be. If James White can't start the season, who's going to be in that crucial third down role? And the two guys to this point that have really stood out are Ty Montgomery and Ramondre Stevenson. Both of them were heavily involved today. What did you think of what they've done?
Yeah, I've banned myself from talking about Ramondre Stevenson, even on my own podcast, because it's just got to be too much. It is Stevenson, as we like to say. So I think the world of that kid. I think he's got incredibly soft hands. His feet are especially light at 225 pounds, which he's running at now. He's more comfortable in the system. I asked Vinny Sinceri, the running back coach, about him today before practice, and he just says it's so much more comfortable, and a lot of it's a credit to guys like James White. But, I mean, when he's – and I haven't run the total numbers, but at least 4 days into camp, he was leading the team in catches, and he had three more today. And these are all flat throws, or maybe it's an angle route. Like, it's all simple, high percentage stuff, but he's contributing. He's getting opportunities, and I think that's only going to amplify his case as a player who we talk about Mac Jones making your year to leap, Christian Barmore, same deal. What about Stevenson? You know, like, Damian Harris didn't have a single target today in team drills, and it's because Ramondre's been so good there. So I like him a lot. Montgomery has surprised me, but I just think – he's been sapped so much of that explosion, right, that we saw from 2018, which was his last year when, you know, he had 300 or more all-purpose yards. So I think he's still going to be a core special teamer and kind of, you know, break glass in case of emergency option at running back and receiver.
You mentioned Barmore. I want to get to him in a second. I'm actually going to make you talk about Ramondre Stevenson a little bit more now that you told
okay,
me
right,
that.
All right.
So the Patriots, they like to group their running backs into kind of two groups. You have your early down guys and the pass catching guys, and it's very rare guys do both. And when they do, they're generally a backup in both spots. Like Rex Burkhead comes to mind, right? Being the secondary early down back and the secondary pass catching back. If this is the way they're going with Ramondre, we're going big picture here beyond camp. If Ramondre is going to be the guy that steps up to James White, to James White's role, do you think this is a trend breaker where he continues his early down back role as well and becomes like a 60% usage rate guy, which is almost unheard of in New England under Bill Belichick? Or do you think they transition him to that role and maybe some of that early down stuff goes more to Damian Harris or maybe Kevin Harris gets involved there or somebody else?
Yeah, I think it's a good question because there are a lot of factors that you have to consider, right? You know, first right. One is health, and that's the most boring and obvious part. But Damian Harris has missed a good 2, 3, 4 games every season of his career when he's been active. So that'll happen. What do you do in those weeks? Do you give it to Ramondre Stevenson 25, 30 times a game? That also depends on how do you feel about J.J. Taylor? Is he a guy who, even in his third season, hasn't really warranted a whole lot of trust in that passing down? The other part, you talk about big picture. You know, I think the reason that the Patriots split up, not only just because of health and workload, the early down backs from the third down backs is just the complexity of the offense, right? I mean, pass protection was always the area in which, even I remember asking Bill about Sony Michel as a rookie, like what is going to be the hardest part of learning and playing the NFL as a rookie running back? And he just without question, blitz pickup, pass protection. So if the offense is simplified in every other sense, it probably is simplified in blitz pickup too. And then that becomes an easier avenue for Ramondre Stevenson's second year. If he's a third down back, but he's also 225 pounds and you trust him carrying the ball, he could play. Then, of course, it depends on Damian Harris. But yeah, I could see him seeing, as you said, more of a higher usage rate than anyone else on the roster. And that doesn't even get into guys like you mentioned, Kevin Harris or Pierre Strong. We haven't seen yet.
Right. All right. Let's get into now. You mentioned Christian Barmore. We're talking about this year two leap. We might as well. I thought along the line, both sides, I thought he was the most impressive player today. Won a couple of one-on-ones. He was part of that disruption in the running game. I'm not going to say that the full-on year two jump is here. He's an all-pro because of one day of training camp. But between what DeMarcus Mitchell said about him before practice, raved about the way he locked in the offseason, the mental focus, really learning, digesting the defense. And then you see him today and that explosiveness. I don't know if it's better. I don't know if it just seems so great because we haven't seen it in a year. How high are your expectations with Christian Barmore?
Yeah, I'm hesitant because I think he might be a player that falls into the category of you want to see more, but the coaching staff, for whatever reason, doesn't trust him to give that opportunity, right? And this isn't a one-for-one comparison, but how long have we been talking about Josh Uche? Play Josh Uche more. You know, he's just got that natural bend, that talent, that explosion off the edge. You don't see with other Patriots edge rushers. Now, his primary problem, of course, is setting the edge, and it's going to be paramount here in New England so long as Bill Belichick is the head coach. With Barmore, I don't think he has that issue because he can play multiple spots on the defensive line. But of course, his opportunity is going to put a ceiling on whatever, you know, his production could be and his impact could be. And I just wonder how much they might want him to earn a little bit more of that. Now, I don't think Lawrence Guy at age 32 should stand in his way. So I think this is a kid who has got Pro Bowl potential, because don't forget, you know, we refer to him now as a second rounder, right? He's a kid who started playing football in high school, like was just starting to figure this out, and goes to a couple camps and Alabama offers him late. He was going to go somewhere else, but they saw enough raw talent in there that they jump in. He has that stellar finish to the 2020 season in Alabama and did the same in 2021. So he might just be a slow starter in the bigger picture with his football playing experience or season to season. But I think he's a guy that maybe right on par with Matthew Judon. If you need a pressure, you need a sack, you need a quarterback hit, like he's a guy you can go to.
So you talk about that, right? And that's what he's been. I think taking that next step, and you talk about, do they trust him to play more, is as a run defender. And again, it's just one day. What we saw today is him taking care of some run fits, some run responsibilities. Now it's not full speed, but it's that to me is what to watch with him. I think we know that he can go and get after the quarterback. The question for him heading into year two for me is, well, can he also contribute on running downs? Can he be a true three down player? He was at times last year a little bit, but really be a guy that can get up into that, you know, 75-80% usage rate for a defensive lineman.
Yeah, and it, you know, it'll depend on the scheme, of course, and what they're doing. But at some point, like, I think there's a case where he's their best defensive lineman, period, midseason, you know, the way he's ascending. And of course, that's tied to health. And at that point, you just have to play a guy like that who's more talented and more capable run versus pass, because great, he doesn't play the run as well. You know what are the most important downs in football? They're all passing downs, save for kind of third and short or fourth and short. At that point, yeah, bring on Carl Davis. But on almost every other down and scenario, I want Christian Barmore out there, because that's a guy who's going to impact the pass and get after quarterbacks, get his hands up in those lanes and create disruption, which is what you saw today. So, you know, in some of the way that they'll defend different running schemes, like today, again, was a lot of outside zone for the offensive line. They're working out the kinks, but they want to penetrate there. They want to spread you out, get thin, as people know, back in, you know, the Rams Super Bowl at 6-1 front. It was just, we'll put one guy across every gap and try to get upfield. And so he's a guy that's suited to do that. I think can defend in other ways, but it's just, I don't know. I'm for whatever reason, a little hesitant to say he's headed for starter, because I just think the coaching staff might be reluctant to put him out there as much as you or I might.
No, I totally see it. And I think Uche is kind of a good comparison, because we've seen this really at the linebacker position, even a little bit at corner. I know people don't love Juwan Williams at this point, but he never really got that chance. Like, he was a guy and he was buried on the depth chart and all of that, but they do have a little bit of a history of waiting to play some of these younger guys on the defensive side of the ball. On offense, though, Cole Strange, today was his first day full pads against NFL competition. What'd you make of what he did today?
Yeah, it was a little rough for Cole because, you know, we just talked about Barmore. He got to introduce him to what, you know, one-on-one passers was like in the NFL and just absolutely pushed him straight back, put him on skates, as you like to say. And then I think Cole got tabbed with a probable hold on Henry Anderson, and Bill's coaching him up on the side after that. So, look, those are going to happen, especially day one. And I think, though, he's also at the center of that offensive line that we just talked about, giving up a ton of disruption, and particularly in his own scheme, that I think is well suited for his talents. He's a highly athletic, you know, smart kid who can make those reach blocks if necessary to kind of jump over a gap and get to an off defensive tackle. But you just, you know, we've heard a lot of good things. It's one day in pads. It's really hard to reach any sort of conclusions, just like with anyone, but especially offensive linemen, and especially a rookie one at that.
Did anybody else along the lines, offensive or defensive, stand out to you today?
I liked some explosion from Daniel Ekuale, though he was sent for a penalty lap at the end. He had to run stuff on his own from what I had seen. Also won a couple one-on-one pass rushes. But it's just, you know, he'll miss the first two games of the season due to suspension. Where does he have a space in this roster? It depends on how they want to play their fronts. Like, he's not a two-gapping kind of defensive tackle. He stood out a little bit offensively, and I don't expect to say his name again throughout training camp, so I'll say it now. Arlington Hambright, I had down for two wins, okay? So one was against Carl Davis, and the second victory escapes me now, but I thought he held his own there. And you know, he's a third-year player, former seventh-round pick of the Bears, bounced around a little bit. He's only played, I think, like 80 career offensive snaps. So the thing is, though, you know, those backup interior spots are going to be up for grabs, because Cody Russey, you know, another rookie offensive lineman, kind of got some tough love there today, too. And so they'll settle in. But I think for now, you know, those two guys, as far as the fifth practice and day six of training camp, you know, give credit where it's due, those two.
I think Hambright's an interesting one because, like you just said, outside of James Ferentz, there's not a ton of depth on that interior. And you look at that spot, if they need to make a change of tackle, if this experiment and tackle doesn't work out with Trent Brown and Isaiah Wynn, it's probably Michael Onwenu moving to the outside from that guard spot. Then at left guard, you have a rookie. So it's an area you might want to be a little deeper. And for guys like Arlington Hambright, Drew Desjarlais had one one-on-one today that I thought stood out. It was a little higher level of effectiveness than I kind of expected from him. Those are guys that realistically are going to compete for a spot. I don't know that they were a top 53 player on the roster, but when you put that final 53 together and you have to figure out that depth, those guys, it seems like you're going to have a shot at it.
Yeah. And it's tough to say because David Andrews comes back for the first time today and he got, I'll say victimized in the Devon Godchow train that has been fueled by this big new contract. And he just pushes him back. And he should be fine. And if David Andrews is healthy, that solves a lot of issues from an organization standpoint, communication, and obviously physically just playing center, because then you can rely on him, Trent Brown, to help out Cole Strange on that left side. Right, Mike Onwenu should be fine at right guard, but you're right. If there's an injury, there might be some sort of a domino effect. And let's also not just assume that, if Trent Brown goes down, you might move Isaiah Wynn back to left tackle, where we've seen him take reps now with the second string offensive line. They're still padding their depth there, and I think he might be plan A, if Brown goes down, and then you need a new right tackle. So that could be Mike Onwenu. So there are a lot of different iterations. I think that's what camp is for. People forget, as we report, self included, who's on scout team, who's at this position. They're experimenting. They're trying to learn about the roster just as we are.
Right, exactly. Let's move into the secondary now. Through the first 4 days of camp, Terrence Mitchell, I thought, looked good. He might have jumped ahead a little bit in that competition to be the second outside corner next to Jalen Mills. I thought Malcolm Butler came back in a big way today, and then Jack Jones is still sort of in that picture too. Where do you have that battle as we get into the padded practices?
Yeah, I said this on my podcast the other day. For me, the cornerback conversation right now is just Jalen Mills and everybody else. That's just weird. And Terrence Mitchell has been entrenched at the spot opposite him. Terrence Mitchell today had the interception, just a very, very, very early birthday gift from Mac Jones. But beyond that, we've seen Terrence Mitchell now kind of panic. And we saw this in one-on-ones today against Nelson Aguilar, who just smoked him up the right sideline. And Nelson Aguilar's a fast guy. But he just throws his hands out as DPI, F it kind of penalty. And we saw that on Saturday too. And I don't remember the exact scenario. I think it was in the end zone, but just looked very clear. I know I'm committing a penalty and I don't care. And sometimes it's a better play, but I just don't think there's going to be a lot of tolerance for that style of play as we kind of move in here. So you mentioned Malcolm Butler. He gets beat by Devontae Parker twice on long balls, once in one-on-ones, once in team drills. And then you get closer to the red zone. And I think that's where his ball skills get to be more evident, because the problem with Malcolm Butler, from what I can tell, is just that deep ball defense, which is something that, if you think back to last year and talk about Jalen Mills, is something they really fixed with him. His eye, he had bad eyes a lot in Philly, and that would get him into trouble. But if he's aware of his matchup, the down and distance, and keeps his eyes in the right spot, they fixed that. And he was really good in the back half of last year. So with Malcolm in the red zone, he deflects a fade throw for Devontae Parker today. Okay, that's one revenge. And then he gets two hands and another throw in the same back corner of the end zone for Tyquan Thornton. So he's got two pass breakups. Now, that doesn't outweigh two allowed touchdowns or one in team drills and one on one-on-ones, right, but he's in the mix. And I think it's just how can you maximize those ball skills and whatever he has left? Because largely to date, he's kind of looked like a 32-year-old who took a year off.
You talk about some of those deep balls. The catch of the day today, to me, was Tyquan Thornton down the sideline against Juwan Williams. Mac Jones puts up a rainbow for him. He goes full extension past Williams to grab it. This is another guy that, we normally talk about, what do the linemen look like in pads, but Tyquan Thornton, I think the biggest question with him is how is he going to react to getting hit at the line and things like that. We didn't see a ton of him today. He had that miscommunication. It looked like that led to that interception, maybe cut his route a little shorter than he was supposed to. But what was your initial impression of him now that, the defensive backs can knock him around a little bit?
Yeah, it's interesting because he had two wins versus Juwan Williams. And he got, I don't know if it was just indecision or if Juwan got a good jam on him. But on that rep where he makes the big catch downfield, right, you see the catch-up speed evident down the sideline. Now, Juwan Williams is someone I think we all have as a prime cut candidate. Come August 30th, that dude's on the way out of town. So it's not that great of a rep. Mind you, Juwan Williams was also N'Keal Harry's, favorite victim, only victim when he was here in New England during these one-on-ones. And we know how much that meant. But as far as Tyquan Thornton goes, he did beat him twice in one-on-ones. He was 0-for-2 when targeted in team drills. And part of that, again, there's some baked-in bad luck. But I, you know, you just want to see some more consistency, and that's something that's boring. And you could say of every position and player, particularly young ones, and it's going to be harder to see, but if he's going to see the field, he needs to be more consistent. That means with his route tree, making those type of plays. So the deep ball, I would give more credit to Mac Jones, who just put that on the freaking GPS style, like pinpoint accuracy money. But you know, he didn't get manhandled today. He just, you want to see less of going from four catches. I think it was on Friday. Or Thursday, excuse me, and then one on Friday, none on Saturday, and then none today in team drills. Like, that can't continue.
The interesting thing with him and Juwan, you make a good point that N'Keal, remember, we thought last year N'Keal might sneak in and be like the wide receiver too, based off what he was doing to Juwan at this point.
I was
out
of N'Keal for the record, and it was mostly due to the team drill production. But yes, unequivocally, he had some of the best one-on-one grabs. It was just, it never translated when it was like full on football.
I was out on that. I said, you know what, show me when he does it to somebody else. But and maybe this says more about the state of the Patriots secondary than anything else. Again, with Thornton, the big question to me is, how is he going to handle bigger physical corners, kind of just getting their hands on him at the line? Juwan Williams might be the Patriots, you know, biggest, strongest corner right now, just in terms of natural size and strength, right? So it sounds kind of weird to say, I want to see what the second round pick can do against arguably their worst cornerback. But, you know, they don't have Stephon Gilmore to get in his face and give him the business right now. So it almost feels like you have to put a little bit of stock into that just because he's not going to see anything like that until we get to joint practices.
Yeah, and you want to see how he uses his 6'2" frame because we talk about the speed so much. But he's and the speed, and then the second part is just how skinny he is. It could be his whole body. It could be his calves. It could be his wrists, which I didn't know about skinny wrists until Tyquan Thornton, but I guess he has some. The thing that we forget, though, is he's skinny because he's so tall. Like, he's 6'2". And 185 pounds or 180 pounds, whatever it is, not just the latter. So when he's 6'2" going down the sideline, can he use that frame, even if he has less muscle than a Juwan Williams, with proper leverage or technique or whatever it might be? Because he's going to need to do that. You can't just count on a single trait at the NFL level to get you by as he might have at Baylor with that 4.2 speed. So, you know, again, the encouraging part was him fighting through that jammer indecision coming off the line. It was really ugly. And then it finished with a beautiful catch. And that's just going to have to be, I think, what you experience and expect from these rookies, who, again, are not going to be consistent. But if he wants to see the field ahead of guys who are established known commodities, Devontae Parker, Kendrick Bourne, Jacoby Myers, that's what he's going to have to do.
Is there anything else you're going to be looking at now that the pads are on, you know, later on this week that we didn't get to touch on?
It's tough. I think you just got to go to the offensive line. Like, they seem very committed to this outside zone scheme, and it's not particularly sexy or interesting or easy to convey and talk about, aside from just, you know, it when everyone's taking the same lateral step in unison at the snap. But if that crumbles or doesn't work, and I'm not talking in the preseason, I'm not even talking at Miami week one, but I'm talking through the first four or five games, you're in real trouble, because the arguably the most talented group on this roster, aside from the safety, let's just talk offense, is the running back group. And you need to get that offensive line figured out. So that's, I'm just going to keep my eye on, keep your expectations low, I think, because it's going to take time to develop and pivot to this. And they've had outside zone in the playbook for a long time. It's not like it's a new scheme. It's not even terribly complicated, but it does take a long time to master. And I think that's the thing with the pads on. You have to look in the trenches, because everything we've been doing today is charting 7-on-7s and 11-on-11s. And those are great. But as we've said for the last week and you started, it's not real football. So, like, let's get to the real physical part. That's what I'm going to be looking for this week.
All right. He is Andrew Callahan. He covers the Patriots for the Boston Herald. You can follow him on Twitter at Andrew Callahan. He also hosts the Pats Interference podcast on CLNS Media. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime, Alex.